So we've tried to exploit that by doing trials comparing intravenous and intraperitoneal therapy. And there have been three North American large randomized trials, all of which have showed a benefit with regard to progression-free and overall survival in somewhere between 19 and 25%. Almost all, though, also show greater toxicity. You have another catheter in the peritoneal cavity that you have to be able to manage. Perhaps have sort of shot ourselves in the foot because we've always said, let's take the MTD of some regimen and we will use that. And because of that, there have been more toxicities in the intraperitoneal arms in almost all the studies. It probably is a combination of a pharmacologic advantage and the route of administration. The first study that was done was pretty simple, straightforward. It was cisplatinum and cyclophosphamide, and the only difference between the two arms, the doses were the same, was the route of administration, and there was a benefit for that. So clearly there's something just about IP that is beneficial. What we've been most interested in recently has been, because of the toxicity issue, is to see if we can use carboplatin in place of cisplatinum. And some old data had suggested that carboplatin was not as good as cisplatin intraperitoneally. But that was based on observations kind of comparing the milligram per milligram. And we don't use the milligram per milligram. When we use AUC dosing with carboplatin, we're usually giving somewhere around, you know, 4 to 8 times more on a milligram per milligram basis. So when you look at it that way, it actually may turn out to be as good as cisplatin. So all of the sort of studies that we're looking at in phase 1 and even phase 2 now, most of them with intraperitoneal therapy are using carboplatin with the thought that maybe even if it's a little bit less active or doesn't work quite as well intraperitoneally as cisplatin, if you can get many more patients to complete the therapy, you may actually end up having a clinical advantage. The question is, do we have the heart to do another randomized phase 3 trial looking at intraperitoneal therapy? Will it have an IV arm? If you are a proponent of intraperitoneal therapy, you probably think that's not the right thing to do. If you're still not quite sure based on those 3 randomized trials, people still want an IV arm. And so the community is somewhat divided, I have to say. You know, we may end up with IP therapy being something analogous to patients with leukemia or patients who are having a bone marrow transplant, which is that, you know, maybe they're only going to be treated at institutions or in groups that have a large enough volume and have great enough interest in this that they maintain staff comfortability with how to troubleshoot. And it may just be that it ends up being a little bit more of a niche type of treatment or a specialized type of treatment. Certainly, I know that in our area, there are community practices that give IP therapy, but it takes chair time, it takes staff time. And so people have to be sort of dedicated to making it work.
If you had to sort of guess, to what extent do you think, or maybe you have some even better than a guess, IP therapy is being utilized right now outside of tertiary centers?
Yeah, I think it's probably very geography dependent. I think it also depends. Some GYN oncologists give chemotherapy, some don't. They may be much more comfortable with IP therapy. I will tell you that in our local area, there are GYN oncologists that don't give chemo, and the medical oncologists who take care of their patients now consider ovarian cancer part of their bread and butter, and so they've figured out how to be able to give IP therapy. So I think one can do it if one's motivated and you want to make sure that your staff maintains how to do it, but I think it's probably variable from situation in different geographic areas. If you look at sort of the, you know, raise your hand kind of things that we've done at some of the gynecologic meetings, I would say that there's probably somewhere between 25 and 50% of people who consider IP the standard of care for a patient with optimally debulked ovarian cancer.